Good afternoon, Juneau in Southeast Alaska. It's 2:59 p.m. You're listening to KTOO in Juneau, and it's time for Juneau Afternoon. I'm Ken Fix. I'll be your host for today. And first up, we'll talk with Philip Crowder, Greg DeSantis, and Ricci about the Juneau Dance Theater's new production, Ballet to Broadway. We'll learn about the new chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution with guest Regina Falaci. We'll find out about the selection process for the position of conductor of the Juneau Symphony. David Woody will be here with Scott Burton to highlight Thursday night's Alaska Original Recording at 360 Studios. And we'll have information on the Raining Colors 5K fundraiser with Jenny Tweeto. And first off, National Native News will be up, and we'll be right back.
This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez. The cleanup of an old mine on the Spokane Reservation is causing some friction in the community. Steve Jackson has more.
The Midnight Mine operated on the Spokane Indian Reservation from 1955 until 1981. The uranium mine site was listed as a Superfund site in the year 2000. The latest plans to fill in open pits left from the mine excavations are coming under fire from some tribal members. Deb Abrahamson says that the tribal council agreed to allow the mine owner, Don Mining, a subsidiary of Newmont Mining, to purchase land adjacent to the mine site. The company plans to clear-cut that property to access fill dirt for the cleanup.
Our concern is that it increases the footprint of the mine site. It totally undermines our tribal sovereignty and violates our inherent natural law and traditional values. The mining company has already, as the destructive force as it has been, this is as if we're giving it another break to continue to destroy.
Abrahamson says that she and some other tribal members would have preferred the mining company to bring infill dirt from a location outside the reservation. But they were told by the company that truck traffic would be as high as one vehicle coming in every 1.5 minutes. But she claims that information was not substantiated by any type of transportation study. The tribal council signed off on the agreement with the company for the cleanup procedures. Calls to the tribal chairman were not returned. A mining company official told us the dispute was between the council and some tribal members and did not want to comment. For National Native News, I'm Steve Jackson reporting from Spokane.
The Lakota Ray Harvest Camp in Wisconsin is moving off public forest land to nearby private land. Iron County sought eviction, which led to a months-long standoff by camp members. Mike Simonson reports.
LCO Harvest Education Learning Project spokesman Paul Demain says they'll be off public land in a week, with just a few things left to move and clean up. He says they'll continue to educate people about the pristine Pinoki Range and oppose the proposed iron ore mine.
Oh, absolutely. I think we'll be able to do it a lot better.
Demain says he's relieved there were no confrontations. He credits Iron County Sheriff Tony Furick for that.
He's certainly long-term sighted. He has in mind the keeping of the peace.
County Forestry Director Joe Varis says he's glad the conflict ended without having to forcibly evict the LCO project.
When it's 100% gone, but yeah, that's good news if it's 95% gone.
Furick says it is 95% gone and expects they'll be finished in a week. He says public criticism by a few county board members who wanted LCO ejected in February doesn't bother him.
Peace was kept, and, you know, you can't move out in a week with put in 11 months. It took a little bit of time, and matters been resolved.
Furick says no one has been staying at the camp for the past 2 weeks. For National Native News, I'm Mike Simonson.
Native American golfer Nota Begay III is recovering after a heart attack. According to the MB3 Foundation, Begay is expected to make a full recovery. He had surgery last week. In a statement, Begay thanked his supporters and says he looks forward to returning as a golf analyst and continuing his foundation work. He goes on to say the experience reinforces the need to address health and wellness among Native youth. Begay's MB3 Foundation was launched in 2005 to help reduce type 2 diabetes and childhood obesity. In In April 2013, the U.S. Department of Justice honored the Prairie Band Potawatomi Nation's Tribal Victim Services Program. It was recognized for creating a healing arts program for sexual assault victims. The Kansas Tribes program was among others and individuals awarded in Washington, D.C. during National Crime Victims Rights Week. This is National Native News. I'm Antonia Gonzalez.
National Native News is produced at the Annenberg National Native Voice Studios in Albuquerque, New Mexico by Kiwanis Broadcast Corporation, with offices in Anchorage, Alaska. Funding is provided by the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, the Annenberg Foundation, and the Ford Foundation.
Support for this program is provided by the Native American Rights Fund, reminding you that sovereignty is not free. Native American Rights Fund has been helping Indian tribes for over 40 years with critical issues such as treaty enforcement, hunting and fishing rights, Indian child welfare, religious freedom, and more. You too can become a modern-day warrior with your support for NARF's work. Learn more at narf.org and join the fight for Native rights.
Native Voice One, the Native American Radio Service.
And the Juno Afternoon continues with my three guests in the studio here, Philip Crowder, Greg DeSantis, and Ricci, and they're from the Juno Dance Theater's new production of Ballet to Broadway. Welcome, all three of you.
Thanks.
Thank you.
Hi.
Okay, it's great having you, and please tell us about your production.
Well, our production is called Ballet to Broadway, and it's going to be held this weekend at Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium, Friday, May 2nd, 7 p.m., Saturday, May 3rd at 7 p.m., and Sunday matinee, May 4th at 2 p.m., and tickets are going to be available at Hearthside Books, at the Jack, and online at www.jahc.org, or at the door. And this year, ticket prices are going to be $15 for adults, and for senior students and youth, it's going to be $10, and there's a 10% discount for four or more if you buy your tickets at the Jack. And this year we're going to be doing our usual ballet to Broadway split, where the first part of the show is going to be ballet and contemporary dance and modern, and the second part of the show is going to be all Broadway numbers. I handle the classical ballet part of the show, and Ricci Adan handles the Broadway part of the show, and together as a team we bring a really great production onto the stage.
Okay, so this is not the first time you've fused ballet and Broadway together then?
No, this is I think maybe our fourth or fifth year that we've been doing this.
Right.
We really love the combination, and we know that the Juno audience enjoys seeing that the difference, you know, different dance styles that we present, and it's very challenging.
Okay, Ricci, tell me about the Broadway part of this show.
The Broadway part, we have about nine numbers. So we have from West Side Story. It's a West Side Story suite, and then we have something from Matilda, and which is a new musical. And we also have Shenandoah and Chorus Line. So it's more than it ever has. I mean, the numbers that we're giving this year, it's like nine numbers. So
right.
It's a big Broadway debut.
Yeah, for the West Side Story suite, there's going to be Dance at the Gym, which a lot of people are familiar with from the movie. And there's going to be America and Cool. Those are all really great numbers with singing also along with dancing. And also we're going to do Shenandoah's Next to Lovin', I Like Fightin' Best, which is a real rousing number with all men. And that's going to be very entertaining. And then the number from Matilda is going to be Naughty. It's going to be sung by Lily Otzi, who's one of our local talented young students here. And then the big finale, the end of the show, is going to be One from A Chorus Line, a big group number with gold hats and vests and bow ties, and it's very entertaining. I'm sure a lot of people are familiar with that particular dance. And also, we have guest artist Gregory DeSantis here, and he's going to be dancing the Don Quixote pas de deux and the Bluebird pas de deux from Sleeping Beauty with JDT dancer Anouk Otzi.
Okay, Greg, you haven't said anything yet. Jump in here.
Hi. No, I'm so glad I have a chance to be here. I've never been to Alaska. I've never worked with Philip or Juno Dance Theater before, and it's just been a pleasure. It's been great weather for me this week, which is really nice, seeing kind of like a fake Alaska. Here it's normally colder, but that's great. And yeah, on the dance end, it's very exciting. You know, there's only a week, which is much less time than normal, so you kind of rehearse independently, and then Anouk and I just get together this week. You know, it will be less than 7 days before when we first, you know, touched each other to when we'll be on the stage, which is very exciting, but, you know, takes a lot of work, a lot of long hours, but it's coming together, and it's going to be really great.
Okay, that's one topic I was going to ask you, is how much time does it normally take you to get up into speed in a production number like this?
I'd say normally a company where everyone's, you know, in the same place, you could spend probably 2 months is in a professional setting, in a school a year to prepare for a show like that.
You're doing it in like a week.
Correct.
Right, yeah. Right. As a school, you know, most of our dancers are students,
right,
of course, and they're very accomplished. You know, dancers, many of them go off to summer intensives and go study at ballet company schools during the summer. And our shows do look a little bit more on the professional side, I would have to say, in my opinion, because of all the talent we have. But it takes about 3 or 4 months to prepare the kids for the show. I started working on it, you know, back in September. And then we come back from the Christmas break, you know, we just go full blast into these, preparing for these shows.
Right.
And, you know, doing all the choreography. And then Greg only has just a few days to prepare, you know, with his partner. And when he gets here, he just meets his new partner, and then they just go right into the studio and start rehearsing for
They're like 18 hours a day then, right?
Oh, yeah. Sure.
We do rehearse, you know, on our own. So Anouk was rehearsing here with Philip as her, as a stand-in for her partner, and I rehearsed on my own in San Francisco. So that's what's nice you can do about with the big ballets. You know, everyone knows the choreography and knows the steps. It's just getting used to the individual nuances of, you know, particular dancers and their style of movement.
And we're so happy to have Greg here. They're going to be dancing one of the most famous pas de deux in the ballet repertoire, is the Don Quixote pas de deux, with all the variations, and it's really wonderful to see that. And also they'll be doing the famous Bluebird pas de deux from Sleeping Beauty, which I'm sure a lot of ballet lovers out there are familiar with. And I really look forward to seeing them perform that on the stage. And also, I'm going to be having one of my new choreography pieces performed by my students. And I'd also like to mention Leslie Wagner, who's our modern dance contemporary teacher. She's going to have a new piece also presented in the program. So we really look forward to seeing all that.
All right, Philip, I was reading online that you have a great commitment and passion to theater dance. You want to talk about that a little bit?
Well, yes, I love theater dance. You know, I always had this fantasy when I was a ballet dancer that I could go on Broadway and sing and, you know, perform in New York on Broadway. But, you know, I couldn't, because I couldn't sing. And I wasn't a very good tap dancer, because I'd spent all my life, you know, doing just ballet day after day. And finally, now that I have an opportunity to be a director, I like to see that kind of style of dancing presented. And I like to see my students training that way. It makes them more versatile. It gives them a broader experience of dance and the different dance styles available. And the ballet training, you know, helps them be better at that kind of dancing, the Broadway style of choreography that you see.
Right, and you don't want to see this go away.
No.
that's what I got from reading that, is that you're very committed and passionate about this.
Yes, I love all styles of dance, and I try to expose not only my students but also the community, the arts community, to as many different types of dancing that we can bring to the stage here.
Okay. Richie, do you have anything to add on the Broadway end of it?
Well, the Broadway side of it, I mean, because ballet has been there since time immemorial, we didn't have any Broadway dancers in the old days, so we had to choose those dancers from SAB or School of American Ballet or ABT to get into, because they're the only ones that are trained, and you can see he's here for only a week and he can get a show together. A ballet dancer has all the classics in him, that the strength, and that's one thing. That's why I like to use Phillip's students, because they're very skilled and they can go higher in any mode. That's why they're really accomplished.
Right. Very good. Sounds like it's going to be a fabulous show. And Greg, just so you know, You're in the Alaska banana belt right now here. It never gets that cold in Juneau. It gets maybe to single digits above zero, and
oh, no.
It rarely gets under that at all.
Everyone told me to take pictures of the igloos and Eskimos.
No.
No, we don't have that.
Okay, I'll let them know.
we take pictures of the three Subway restaurants that are here, though.
Yeah.
All right, and Philip, remind everybody about the show times and where they can get tickets again.
Well, it's Juneau Dance Theater's Ballet of Broadway at Thunder Mountain High School Auditorium. May 2nd at 7 p.m., May 3rd at 7 p.m., and May 4th at 2 p.m. Tickets are available at Hearthside Books, at the Jack, and online at www.jack.org or at the door. Adults $15, senior students and youth $10. There's a 10% off for four more at the Jack. For more information, call 463-5327 or go to www.genodance.org. For more information.
Okay, great. Philip Crowder, Greg DeSantis, and Ricci, thank you, all three of you, for being our guests in the studio today.
Thank you, Ken.
And here is the Writer's Almanac for Wednesday, the 30th of April, 2014. It was on this date, 1859, Charles Dickens's A Tale of Two Cities was first published. It came out in serial form in a new weekly magazine all the year round, which Dickens himself had founded. And A Tale of Two Cities was on the front page of the first issue. Thanks to his popularity, the first issue sold 125,000 copies. The magazine was successful from the start. Dickens's investment paid off, and he serialized Great Expectations in the magazine 1 year later. A Tale of Two Cities, which begins, it was the best of times, it was the worst of times, it was the age of wisdom, it was the age of foolishness, it was the epoch of belief, it was the epoch of incredulity, it was the season of light, it was the season of darkness, it was the spring of hope, it was the winter of despair. We had everything before us, we had nothing before us. We were all going direct to heaven, we were all going direct the other way. It's the birthday of Annie Dillard, born in Pittsburgh, 1945. She wrote her master's thesis on Thoreau's Walden. Then she moved to a cabin in the Blue Ridge Mountains and kept a daily journal of her observations of nature, her thoughts about religion, wrote in old notebooks and on 4x6-inch index cards. And her book, Pilgrim at Tinker Creek, published in 1974, won the Pulitzer Prize for nonfiction. She was only 29 years old. Her most recent work is a novel, The May Trees. And it was on this date in 1952 Anne Frank's diary was first published in English, Diary of a Young Girl. Came out in Dutch, 1947, under the title The Secret Annex. Anne Frank died of typhus in the Bergen-Belsen concentration camp about 2 weeks before the camps were liberated in 1945. After the war, her father, Otto Frank, was given the diary. He wasn't able to read it for a while. It was too painful. But when he did, he saw that his daughter meant for the diary to be published. There were two versions of the diary, the A version, made up of journal entries, and the B version, rewritten by Anne herself. Her father edited the two together. He left out 5 pages of her original A version, pages in which she described the progress of her sexual development and ranted about her mother. Those pages were restored in the definitive edition, which was published in 1995. Here's our poem for today, which is an excerpt from Anne Frank's diary for Wednesday, February 23rd, 1944. As long as this exists, I thought, and I may live to see it, the sunshine, the cloudless skies, while this lasts, I cannot be unhappy. The best remedy for those who are afraid, lonely, or unhappy is to go outside, somewhere where they can be quite alone with the heavens, nature, and God, because only then does one feel that all is as it should be, and that God wishes to see people happy amidst the simple beauty of nature.
As long as this exists, and it certainly always will, I know that then there will always be comfort for every sorrow, whatever the circumstances may be, and I firmly believe that nature brings solace in all troubles. From Anne Frank, The Diary of a Young Girl, published by Bantam Books, and used by permission here on the Writer's Almanac, supported by the Poetry Foundation, publisher of Poetry Magazine, committed to discovering great poets and printing their verse. Back issues and subscriptions available at poetryfoundation.org. And by Lumosity.com, a brain training program designed by neuroscientists that has been used by 50 million people worldwide. More at Lumosity.com. Engineered by Noah Smith and produced by Joy Biles, be well, do good work, and keep in touch.
The Juno World Affairs Council presents Grameen Foundation with Alex Counts, Thursday, May 15, starting at 5:15 at the Jack. Mr. Counts founded Grameen Foundation and became its president and CEO in 1997, after having worked in microfinance and poverty reduction for 10 years. Since its modern beginnings, Grameen Foundation has grown to a leading international humanitarian organization with an annual budget of approximately $25 million. That's Alex Counts, Thursday, May 15, starting at 5:15 at the Jack. This message is brought to you by JWAC, bringing the world to Juno.
And the Juno Afternoon continues. It's 3:20 p.m., and my guest now is Regina Falacci, and she's going to talk to us about the new chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution. Hi, Regina. How are you? Okay. Maybe she's not there here. All right. We'll be right back. Okay, that was a little bit of the Attica Quartet, and they're going to be featured in this year's Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. So what you just heard was a song called The Bird, so I just ran a little bit of that. And now I should have Regina on the line. Let's see if she's there. Hi, Regina.
Hi, how are you today?
I'm doing fine. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for having us on the show.
You're welcome. And talk to us about the new chapter of the Daughters of the American Revolution.
Absolutely. The new chapter has 23 organizing members, and our chapter name is Inside Passage. And we're, of course, based here in Juneau, but we hope to gather members throughout the Inside Passage here in Southeast Alaska. And our organizing celebration is this weekend, and I wish we could invite more people, but we're sold out. So we are going to install our first slate of officers at that meeting. But what I really want to make sure the public knows about is the special projects grants opportunities as well as scholarships. The special projects grants are grants, matching grants, that 501c3 organizations can apply for in the areas of historic preservation, education, and patriotism. And the scholarship opportunities are for those who are heading off to college, and they're in a wide range of areas, anything from history and political science to chemistry, law, and business, and many other areas.
All right, Regina, somebody that runs a 501c3, how would they go about applying for one of these grants?
Well, you can find more information on the DAR website, which is www.dar.org/grants. Or you can email dargrants@dar.org. Likewise, you could also email our chapter. Our chapter email address is insidepassagedar@yahoo.com.
Okay, and can you give us a little bit of background of the history of the Daughters of American Revolution?
I'd be happy to. The DAR was founded in 1890. It is headquartered in Washington, D.C., but it has chapters throughout the country as well as the world. There are about 3,000 chapters and about 175,000 members. To be eligible for membership, you need to be at least 18 years old, a woman, and be able to trace your family tree back to someone who helped in the American side of the American Revolution. There are a lot of resources to help people with their genealogical research. The DAR has a wonderful publication called Forgotten Patriots for those who are researching their African American or Native American ancestors. And there's also all kinds of other materials at the DAR library at our headquarters building. And thankfully, with the internet, there's a lot of other sources available, such as Ancestry.com and Heritage Quest.
Okay, Regina, and how did you get involved in this?
Well, I joined 10 years ago, and when I joined, I was living in Colorado at the time, and I knew I wanted to do something positive for the community. It was just shortly after 9/11, and I was very moved by the events that day. I want to do something for my country, and I wasn't sure what to do. Joining the military didn't seem like an option for me because I knew I wanted to have children soon. That takes you away from family. So I was looking at other avenues, and I remembered as a youngster my father saying to me, "I hope you can join the DAR someday." And I never really knew what it was. It was just some genealogy group. So I looked into that, and lo and behold, I found out that they support patriotism, historic preservation, and education. So I submitted an interest form via the website, and a couple days later, a chapter in my community contacted me, and the rest is history.
Okay, and do you mind sharing who you have in your family lineage that went back to the Revolution?
Oh, sure, I don't mind sharing at all. It's up my father's side of the tree, and it was a man named Martin Heffelfinger, and he was from Switzerland. He came to this country before it was a country in 1740 to the port of Philadelphia with his father and siblings. And when he grew up, the revolution was going on, and he decided to take the oath of allegiance to the new country. And family folklore also has it that he helped supply troops at Valley Forge. I haven't been able to spend time to research that piece of the family folklore, but I have found the documented proof that he took the oath of allegiance in support of the American government.
All right, Regina, thank you very much for sharing that with us. And remind us again about the chapter celebrating its organization, date, time, and place.
This Saturday, May 3rd. At T.K. McGuire's restaurant, and it's at 6:30.
Okay, at McGuire's. That would be great. All right, and anybody that's interested in more information can contact you how?
A couple different ways. They can either go to the DAR website at www.dar.org and look up Become a Member and Locate a Chapter, or via email directly to us at insidepassagedar@yahoo.com.
All right. Well, thank you very much, Regina, for being our guest on the show today.
Thank you for having me.
One, two, one, two, three. millionaire. I know it's over, darling, but honey, daddy ain't mad. I tell you the truth, little girl, you're not the best thing this child ever had. It won't take long. A mama till you fill your bill. I know you, girl. It won't take long. Baby, till you fill your bill. Let me tell you, but you're gonna be walking those streets for a long, old, lonesome time before you find a man like me to curl your toes and roll your eyes back in your hair.
David Bromberg with Tongue from his CD Use Me. He is one of our artists that will be here for the Juno Jazz and Classics Festival. He's going to be here on Friday, May 2nd at 7 p.m. at the A&B Hall. So again, you just got a little taste of what he's got to offer. So buy your tickets, probably available at the Jack. My next guests are from the Juno Symphony. I have Bev Smith and Kristen Garreau here, and they're going to talk about the selection process for the position of the conductor of the Juno Symphony now that Kyle Pickett has left. And welcome both of you.
Thank you.
Okay. Well, tell us a little bit about this.
Well, Kyle took new positions, and so the music director position, which includes being a conductor, opened up, and the board decided to do a national search, and so we formed a committee of interested players and community members and board members, 15 in all, and then we started to investigate how to do this search, and I'll let Kristen say how we started out.
Sure.
Okay, tell us the story.
So, we muddled around for just a little bit to try to just kind of dive into the process of how we were going to recruit folks to apply for the position and really figure out what that position was going to look like on paper. And so we had some gatherings and asked people some questions about what they were looking for in their next conductor and what role the symphony played in their life and what role the symphony plays in our community. And so we collected all this information and put together a job posting and put that out there to the world. And we had about 70 applicants who responded. And then we narrowed that field down to about 30, and just kept narrowing it down further, and did some great interviews and had some great folks, and we've had three candidates that we're really excited about.
Okay, before we get to that, what kind of experience and qualifications were you looking for?
So we were looking for someone who had a doctorate in conducting and had some experience working with community orchestras and volunteer and fundraising. Bev can probably add to that list as well.
I'll add experience with youth, and because we'd like the new music director to be more, I'd say more involved with the youth of Juneau and the not just the student symphony, but the music teachers and the classroom experience in music, and support that in Juneau. And so that was one of the things. And as Kristen mentioned before, I think this was in one of the articles, was that we didn't just want the best conductor out there. We wanted someone that would fit well with Juneau. And so we looked at the whole person, in a sense, not just their conducting skills and experience, but that was part of it too. So we were, in fact, one of our interview questions was, why Juneau, to the folks that we interviewed. When we interviewed 13 people, and that was quite an endurance contest for those of us on the search committee, and I want to give kudos to those search committee members that sat through 13 hours of interviews and put in that time to interview our candidates. And actually, it was very exciting because they got us all jazzed up about what they could do for Juneau.
Okay. Was this like a locked room on a Saturday or something like that?
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah, kind of.
It's like, you know, like the smoke-filled room or something. It's not smoke-filled, though.
We did them all via Skype, and we had a computer set up in the symphony office, and we all sat around and introduced ourselves and waved at the contestant. And so it was interesting. But
okay, and what kind of questions did your applicants have for you?
They were asking us questions about where we saw the symphony headed and what new directions we might go in. It was interesting to hear people's perspectives on ways that we could collaborate with people in the community and involve new audiences in different ways. I think that's one big push that symphonies across the United States are working on, are getting new audience members, filling the seats with younger folks who... it's time to get them interested and hooked in to the symphony. So that was an exciting thing to talk about and hear about from different people.
Okay, did any of those questions that they had for you kind of bring on any light bulbs for you as the selection committee at the, wow, hey, we didn't really think of that before?
Well, and I think that was one really exciting and energizing piece about all the interviews, was just people excited about possibilities and brainstorming lots of different kinds of options. So that was really fun.
Right, and some of them we were madly taking notes when they were suggesting things to do and how to raise money, and whether they got selected or not, we wanted those ideas.
Oh,
so it was
of course,
very
yeah,
nice.
You got to pick their brains a little bit
too,
from a different perspective.
Yeah. Yeah.
On a lighter note, several of them had done a significant amount of homework and studied our website and looked at the links and knew things about Juneau. And asked us questions, and one in particular, after looking at our website, if you've seen it, it has a picture of Kyle on the top of Mount Jumbo and conducting Juneau. And so they all wondered if that was a requirement, was to climb the mountain in your tuxedo.
Or if it was Photoshopped, which it's not. It's
it's
real,
not. Yeah, I know
real,
it's real
photo, yeah.
Well, it's either that or, you know, that's, oh, yeah, you climb it, and once you get to the top, we take your picture. All right, and Bev, I know you've got it weeded down to three candidates now. Do you mind sharing with our listeners who they are?
Sure, I'd be happy to, because they are very exciting. The first one is going to be conducting in November. Our concerts are a little later this year. With scheduling and so forth, it worked out that our first concert is going to be November 15, 16. And Troy Quinn from right now, he lives in Southern California in Los Angeles. He just got his PhD in conducting from the University of Southern California. And his experience, however, had been on the East Coast before that. He had been conducting the Portsmouth Institute Orchestra, which I think is a summer deal. So he can still do that if he were to be a successful candidate here. He could go back there for his summer gig. And I'm trying to remember what his instrument was that he played, and I'm not coming up with something. But one thing is he has conducted choral works, and we looked for that when we were interviewing candidates and to see what their experience was, because I know Juno really likes the choral works, and we have a good chorus with the symphony. And so...
Right, we want to keep that momentum that we've been building the last few years with the Juno Symphony Chorus that just wrapped something up this spring working with the Mozart. So we want to keep that going also.
Right. And another one that also has that experience is Wesley Schultz, and he is presently the conductor of the Bainbridge Island Symphony Orchestra. So he will keep that, again, he would keep that job and combine with Juno, just like Kyle did with his North State Symphony and with Juno. But Wesley has conducted in Bainbridge, and he also has some things going on in the Seattle Festival Orchestra, the Everett Youth Symphony Orchestra, and the Bainbridge Island Youth Orchestra. So he has experience with youth as well. And he just finished a big production of Verdi's Requiem.
Well, so far it sounds like a background really similar to what Kyle had.
It is a little bit. We're kind of, it's like the background similar to where Kyle was when he came to us also.
Right. Yeah.
And so perhaps we'll get another one of those great runs of 14 years of that growth that we have from that, you know, young, energetic person.
All right. Right, we're ready. We're ready to take go to the next level.
All right, and who's our last one?
The last one is Jeremy Briggs Roberts, and he is from the Pullman, Washington, and Moscow, Idaho area, and he conducts what's called the Washington Idaho Symphony in Pullman, and he will be coming up and conducting in the end of March, 2015. Wesley will have the early February concert, and Jeremy Briggs Roberts has the concert in late March. So.
And we'll want to make sure throughout all those concerts and all those times when these folks are visiting that Juno folks take advantage of meeting with them and talking with them and giving us some feedback on all those candidates.
Right. Okay. We will have a reception, a public reception, I think, for them. And we also will have other opportunities. I know Wesley is a runner, and he says anybody that wants to come run with me, he'd be happy to have that happen.
Okay, great. Bev Smith, Kristen Groh, thank you very much for being our guests, and hopefully we can weed this down to a final pretty quick.
Yeah.
You bet.
Okay.
Thanks for having us, and encourage people to come on out and support the symphony.
Okay, thanks for being on the show with us today.
Thanks.
Precious karaoke tune. I try to dance with Miss I guess I'm getting on in years. My phone's on fire.
To have no more fears, but still I always end up in tears.
In tears, in tears.
Transfer with Vibrate off their CD, which is called, guess what, Vibrate. All right, but my next guests in the studio now are David Woody and a familiar person around here, Scott Burton. They're going to highlight Thursday night's Alaska original recording at the 360 Studios. Welcome, both of you.
Thank you. Good to be here, Ken.
Okay, and tell us a little bit about the show.
All right, so this show that we are recording tomorrow night is called The Artist. And it's one of our three new series under the Arts at 360 umbrella. We have Alaska Originals, which has Alaskan musicians performing original material. Some folks may remember Harrison B. We had Todd Grebe. We have Cray Van Kirk coming up on May 15th. That's one series. Our next series is Rider Showcase. So people have been hearing about Endurance coming up. We'll be doing that show in June, on June 5th, we'll be recording that show, and we've also had a holiday show, and we had a spring show, Awakening, so that's the second series, is Writer Showcase, and then this is the third series called The Artist. And the idea is to bring Alaskan artists onto the show and illuminate their work and their life in Alaska and figure out what makes them tick.
All right, Dave, and tell us a little bit about your experiences here in Alaska. How long have you been here?
Oh, well, I've been here, I think, about 37 years, something like that. I moved to Edna Bay in 1976 from Oregon, and I worked in the woods there for quite a while. I think that's part of what the program's going to be about, is I have a kind of a peculiar career trajectory, being a narrative painter with a background in logging and commercial fishing.
Wow, how does that go together?
Yeah, that's what I've been wondering for quite some time now. It's an odd fit, but I kind of began as an artist when I was really young, but I had to give it up for a while and go make a living, and I was basically working in the woods and then later on the water to do that. I started fishing primarily so that I could study art again in the winter, and spent about 7 years doing that, and then started exhibiting, and I've been doing so ever since.
Okay, and tell us about a little bit more about what's going to be on the show.
Yeah, good question. So tomorrow, doors open at 6:30, and the cameras will roll at 7 on the dot, so admission is free. Please come down. It's always great to have folks in the audience. I'll be interviewing David on stage, and he'll be showing slides, images of his paintings on screen. There in the studio and talking about the paintings and his background and why he does what he does. And then I also had the good fortune of going out and doing some pre-production video. So I have video of David teaching, and teaching is a big part of David's life as well. Maybe he can talk about it in a second, but a video of him teaching, and I have video of him in the studio. And so halfway through our half-hour program, we'll roll in those videos as part of this multimedia presentation of its work. So looking forward to it.
Okay. And David, what do you primarily specialize in, landscapes or portraiture? Or?
I do a little bit of portraiture, but I'm what would be called a narrative painter. And that's a very broad category, and I use the term very, very broadly, but I think that kind of it indicates that the story, that the paintings have some suggestion of a story, and that's primarily what I've been doing for the last 20 years or so. And I've been teaching at the university for about the last 11 years, and 22 or 23 semesters, something like that. And so anybody out there who is thinking about taking art classes at the university might want to come check this out, because you'll know what you're going to get for your money then.
Okay, and do you have some pretty interesting stories to accompany your paintings?
Well, they're not really literal stories. I'll get into that a little bit more tomorrow night, but narrative painting these days is a little bit different than it was in the past. It's it might have been more like illustration, but these days most narrative painters are not trying to illustrate a story, they're trying to tell a story or trying to suggest a story, you know, with the painting rather than referring to some pre-existing story.
Okay. And Scott, tell everybody again the date and the time and the location so we can get people out here.
Yeah, it'd be great to have folks come out. Like I said, it's great to have folks in the audience. So this is tomorrow night, Thursday, May 1st. Doors open at 6:30. Cameras roll at 7. It's downstairs at 360, our new television space. If you haven't seen it yet, please come down. This would be a great opportunity. So right here in the KTOO 360 North building. And it will actually be live web streamed on 360north.org, so you could watch it from the comfort of your own home. However, I think it would be much better live.
We need tails in the seats. Right? It's always nice to have that in the audience.
So, again, we'd love to have folks come down. It's free. Learn more about David, see lots of his work, see him at work in the studio, see him at work in the classroom. I'm really proud to be working with David on this. It's been a fun project, and I think we're going to have a great product. So,
all right, David Woody, Scott Burton, thanks for being our guests in the studio, and everybody turn out tomorrow night, 6:30. It's free, and you'll be on TV.
Thanks,
Tim. Thank you.
Aware and Girls on the Run of Southeast Alaska are thrilled to be bringing Girls on the Run founder Molly Barker to Juneau. Please join us for a guaranteed inspirational evening on Thursday, May 8th, 6:30 p.m. at Rockwell Ballroom. Appetizers, a no-host bar, and a silent dessert auction will be available. Purchase tickets at the Jack or Aware. Proceeds will support Girls on the Run of Southeast Alaska. That's Thursday, May 8th, 6:30 p.m., Rockwell Ballroom. Contact Aware at 586-6623. 6623.
This is Bird Note. In spring, millions of songbirds migrate north across the Gulf of Mexico from the Yucatan to the southeastern U.S. One author describes this crossing as one of the greatest crapshoots in bird migration. When the weather is fair and tailwinds strong, the flight, while metabolically taxing, is completed quite handily. But when birds encounter rainstorms or headwinds, they struggle mightily, and many may die. After fighting sustained bad weather, birds reaching the U.S. coast are exhausted and famished. They drop into the nearest shrubs and trees by the thousands. Picture a shrub loaded with colorful tanagers and orioles, such as these orchard orioles, or a tree full of brilliant warblers. These are Tennessee warblers. But why risk exhaustion or a watery demise when birds could instead migrate north along the length of Mexico? It's likely that many birds evolved to take the potentially perilous Trans-Gulf route because it is direct and considerably faster. The Trans-Gulf flight saves nearly a week of travel time, putting birds on the best breeding territories more quickly and thus increasing their chances of raising more young. Find more about Trans-Gulf migration at birdnote.org. I'm Mary McCann.
And the Juno Afternoon continues at 3:52 p.m. Still Ken Fix, your host. And right now I've got Jenny Twido here with information on the Raining Colors 5K fundraiser here in Juno. Hi, Jenny. How are you?
Great. Thanks for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Nice to have you here. And, yeah, we were just talking about the Sitka spruce pollen. It's getting everybody. Okay. Tell us a little about the 5K run.
Okay. Well, this is our second annual Raining Colors 5K. It'll be at River Bend, starting at the covered area, and we continue on to Brotherhood Bridge. This is Sunday, May 4th. Registration begins at 11, and the race will start at noon. Now, this is a race that will benefit the Harborview Triathlon Club. This is 14 boys and girls, 4th, 5th, and 6th graders, who have been training before and after school 4 days a week since March 4th. We're preparing for the Julie Hughes Triathlon in Sitka on May 17th. Julie Hughes Triathlon, it's a great event. This is their 30th year All of their proceeds go to the Sitka Cancer Survivors Society, and then their swim club, the Baranoff Barracuda Swim Club. You can find them on Facebook at Julie Hughes Triathlon. It's a wonderful race. These kids, this is our second year. I think we took 12 kids last year. We have 14 this year. We go over to Sitka. They run their race. It's a 1.5-mile run, a 6-mile bike, and a 500-meter swim. We started this club, the Harborview Triathlon Club, and when I say me, I mean Zach Stinson, Kristen Cashman, Jeanette Lacey Dunn, to help our kids and hopefully other kids understand that being active and healthy is a lifestyle and a lifelong commitment. It can be fun, but it can also be very challenging. And these triathlons allow these kids to be competitive individually, but still be a part of a group. So the Raining Colors 5K is a fundraiser to send these kids to Sitka so that they can run.
Okay, and how do people get involved if they want to just chip in for this and sponsor somebody that's running?
They can make sponsorships or donations at any of our pre-registration sites, and that's Pavitt's, the Nugget Alaska Outfitter, and the Harborview Elementary School here downtown. You can pre-register for this race until Friday the 2nd at 5 p.m. You can also register online at active.com. This is a super fun race. Hundreds of people raced it last year. We had a huge turnout and a beautiful day. It looks like we're going to have another beautiful day on Sunday. Registration fee is going to include not only an awesome race experience, but a packet of color to toss at the end of the race, food, music. We'll have T-shirts until they last. We had about 500 runners last year.
Okay, well, I'll just give you the extended outlook here on the forecast. It says in through Saturday and Sunday, mostly clear with highs around 60 and lows in the mid-30s. So I think you're going to get what you wished for.
Beautiful day for a color run. You can find the color run on Facebook as well. You just need to look for Raining Colors 5K. I need to mention two things quick. We have a huge list of sponsors, the Golden Alaska Lodge and Sitka, Copyworks, Bear, the Juno Emergency Medical Associates, Costco, Heritage, McGivney's. I want to give a shout-out to Amy Dressel at Glacier Peds. She's kind of our first aid station at the race. The Leukemia and Lymphoma Society, Alaska Outdoor Warehouse and Embroidery, and then Run 'em Crazy to Lazy is a business in town run by an amazing runner. People probably know him. His name is Houston Laws. Last year, we donated money to the Boston Foundation, and this year we decided that we wanted to make a local donation to Houston Laws. He's an ultra runner, and this year he's trying to race four 100-mile Alaska races. So it's called the Alaska Slam. He's done two already. He came in fourth place out of 60 runners, I think, in his second race. And he's got another race coming up in June. And the Harborview Triathlon Club is going to sponsor him in this race. He is a nurse in town. He is a great youth advocate, and we're happy to sponsor him.
Okay, real quick again, when is the 5K run?
5K run, Sunday, May 4th. Registration begins at 11 o'clock. Race starts at 12. Remember, you can pre-register until Friday. It's out at Riverbend Elementary School on Riverside, and it will follow along onto Brotherhood Bridge Trail. I also need to make one quick other comment. I know I'm running short on time, but a huge shout-out to Tracy Rivera, who has donated his time and expertise to come out and help coach our kids in the pool. He runs Orca Multisport Triathlon Coaching, and he's been a tremendous help to us.
Okay. All right, Jenny Twido, thank you very much for being a guest on the show today.
I appreciate you having me. Thank you.
Not a problem.
You can look fine and feel fine and still have health issues that need attention. Conditions like high blood pressure, prediabetes, and some cancers are easier to treat when they are found early. Getting a yearly checkup is the first step. Make an appointment today and make a yearly checkup a part of your routine. Take charge of your health. Take charge of your life. For more information, go to safeandhealthyme.alaska.gov. This message is brought to you by the State of Alaska, Department of Health and Social Services.
And it's 3:50, almost 3:59 p.m. This has been a Juno afternoon for Wednesday, April 30th, 2014. Today's forecast in Juno is mostly sunny with highs in the mid-50s and northwest winds at 10 miles an hour, shifting to southeasterly in the afternoon. For tonight, mostly cloudy with a chance of rain south of Juno, lows in the mid-30s and southeast winds at 10 to 20. Tomorrow will be partly cloudy in the morning, then becoming sunny with highs around 60 and northeast winds at 10 to 20 miles an hour. This is KTOO in Juneau. We rebroadcast on translators K276 AF in the Mendenhall Valley and Auk Bay, K269 AO in Lemon and Schweitzer Creeks, K201 AM in Gustavus, K220 BT in Hoonah, K210 AS in Excursion Inlet and Icy Strait. In Juneau, KTOO is on GCI Digital Cable Channel 871. We're also online at ktoo.org. Support for national programming on KTOO comes from the Corporation for Public Broadcasting and listeners like you. And now it's time for All Things Considered.
They do have talks every day with the people holding these hostages, and...